Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota Public Broadcasting brings you the latest from the state legislative session in Pierre. Today we gather SDPB reporters for a roundtable discussion that spans the state. Seth Tupper joins us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's Black Hills studio. Seth, welcome.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me.
Lee Strubinger is with us from the Capitol Building in Pierre. Welcome, Lee.
Good to be here.
Jackie Hendry joins us inside the Kirby Family Studio here with me in the SDPB Sioux Falls Studio. Hey, Jackie.
Hey, Lori.
And Stephanie Rissler is with us from the SDPB Vermilion Studios on the campus of the University of South Dakota. Stephanie, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm going to start in Rapid City with you, Seth, and tell us a little bit about some of the legislation that you followed this week. Let's start with Senate Bill 55.
Yeah, I'm looking at a couple of really West River issues. Senate Bill 55 is a bill that Senator Ryan Maher, a Republican from Isabel, introduced. And when I talked to him about it, when it was still in draft stage, he was of the opinion that this was really going to rock the boat. And I said, well, what is it? And he said he was going to drop a bill to combine the administrations of the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology in Rapid City with the administration of Black Hills State University in Spearfish. And he views this as a cost-saving measure. He added up the 8 or 9 top salaries of the administrators at each school, and they were from $1 million to $1.5 million in total at each school. Mm-hmm. So he figures maybe you could save $1 million or $1.5 million by doing this. And
The boat, he did?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And this goes back to the past, too. There's been attempts to do things like this in the past and save money by combining administrations or even putting the various state institutions under one flagship institution and making the rest like satellite schools. And I think he really wants to start the discussion. He doesn't expect this to pass this year. But when I did talk to him about it, here's a little bit of what he had to say.
Put that all under one administration, and they're 50 miles apart. It's 2020 with technology the way it is. There's no reason that you could not save the state some money by just combining administrations.
And Seth, this is part of a broader conversation in the future, because once you pull up the map and start looking at how close some of these other East River institutions are, we'll be hearing about this concept for a while, won't we?
Absolutely. I think this was just dipping his toe in the water, so to speak, starting with a couple of schools out here in the Black Hills. But I think he has his mind on perhaps, you know, seeing where the conversation goes.
All right. Next, this is a story that you've been covering for quite some time, and people can find that work at RapidCityJournal.com. Now that you're with South Dakota Public Broadcasting, tell us what's the latest with the orphaned gas wells and how that ties into the legislative session, please.
Yeah, to make a really long story short,
right.
There's 40 natural gas wells operated by a company called Spyglass Cedar Creek out of Texas. The wells are up by Buffalo in northwest South Dakota. They've been sitting idle for a long time because the company fell on hard times and hasn't been able to do anything with them or plug them or reclaim them. So finally, the Department of Environment and Natural Resources has proposed a bill to allocate a little more than $700,000 in state funds to go and plug and reclaim those wells. So essentially, we the taxpayers would be footing the bill for plugging and reclaiming those idle wells. And they've proposed a couple of other bills that would allow them to capture another $130,000 in forfeited bonds from another project, move them over to this one. And then they also have a bill to raise the bonding minimums, because this project was only required to post $30,000 in bonds. The new bill would make the minimum $50,000 per well, or $100,000 for an unlimited number of wells for projects going forward.
All right. What's the conversation in Pierre sound like?
Well, they haven't had a hearing on it yet. This bill's awaiting a hearing. I did talk to a guy named Ray Gilbert, who's a rancher up by Buffalo, and is one of the guys who is stuck with these wells on his property and has been waiting for something to happen. And he really supports the higher bonding bill, because he thinks if they could have higher bonds, that would help. And here's what he said about that.
The good reputable companies aren't going to worry about paying it, because their reputation is at stake and they're going to do things right. And the fly-by-night outfits that, like, that we got in trouble with, or they won't pay it probably. And now it's probably good, you know, keep them out, you know, keep the reputable companies in here.
Lessons learned for the future, right, Seth?
Well, we'll see. We'll see if the bills pass, right?
Seth Tupper, thank you so much for being with us. I know you have to head out, so we appreciate your time.
Thanks.
I want to jump to Jackie Henry here in the Sioux Falls studio. Jackie, let's talk about something that came up with the governor's State of the State address and was also mentioned by State Secretary of Education Ben Jones, and that's this JAG, Jobs for American Graduates. How are we seeing this legislation in Pierre unfold?
Well, so far it has received rousing support. So I, for one, didn't really know about the Jobs for America's Graduates program until recently, and it sounds like a lot of people, this was a similar story. So this program, it's a national nonprofit public-private partnership. It identifies middle and high school students with a variety of barriers to success that would be at a higher risk of dropping out of high school, and provides a variety of services to those students to prevent that. So things like career counseling, tutoring, mentoring, job shadowing opportunities, and all sorts of things like that.
All right, does it work?
Nationally, it sure looks like it. So on a national basis, the average graduation rate is 96% for those students at high school, and an 84% positive placement rate. And so they look at that as within a year after graduating high school, the 84% of students nationally who go through JAG are either in the military, in college, or in the workforce, or some combination of the three.
So something like this exists in South Dakota, but we're looking for more or better or what?
Right. So a handful of school districts have JAG programs in the state, and it's really up to those individual districts to organize that. The Wagner School District was the first in the state to adopt this program 11 years ago, and those success rates are even higher for those students, according to testimony in committee the other day. The principal of Wagner High School, Neil Goder, testified yesterday. He says he now has administrators from all around the state calling him for advice on bringing JAG to their schools, and here's what he had to say.
I said, I don't mind playing ball, but if I got to provide the diamond, the players, the gloves, the bats, the balls. So because Renee, Mrs. Vanderwerth, and I have been at it for the 10 to 12, 11 years, we seem to be the so-called experts in it. And so we take all the phone calls. We take all the how do you do this, how do you do this, how do you do this. And that those are things that should come from our leadership from the state level, our leadership conferences for our students, our PD for our advisors. Those should come from the state level. They shouldn't come from us.
All right. Is that what this bill does, this Senate Bill 39?
For the most part, this bill would do three things. It centers the JAG program statewide in the State Department of Education. It establishes a donation fund. So, for instance, you know, businesses who offer job shadowing through JAG, they like this program. It's a workforce development thing for them, so they might want to donate money to the program. This sets up a fund so it's not district by district. It's a centralized thing that can then be allocated out. And then this bill would establish one full-time position in the State Department of Education to be the statewide JAG coordinator. So then again, having that leadership, that coordination, so it's not up to individual districts.
Sure. All right. There was no opposing testimony, but we're all wary of things that are too good to be true.
Right.
Did you find any skepticism about JAG?
The healthy skepticism, not so much about JAG itself, but when it comes to creating that one full-time position in the Department of Ag, that came from Senator Steinhauer. He pointed out that the current turnover in the Department of Education gave him a little bit of room for pause.
You got about 184 employees in the department. You've got turnover. By the time this bill goes into effect, you're going to have lost probably, you know, already 5-10 people. So if you need a specific skill set here, you can look for that person in the turnover. It doesn't, when we got a program, we don't necessarily always need to grow government. So I'd say I can't necessarily endorse a headcount ad, and I'm glad I'm not an appropriator. They got to make that decision.
So, Senator Steinhauer.
There are a lot of people in South Dakota who are glad they're not an appropriator.
Yeah, that's very true. So, Senator Steinhauer, he admits, you know, he's all about this program, thinks it's great, but he brings this up just almost as a warning to the Department of Ed in case they don't get that FTE approved, start coming up with other ideas of how to. You know, make that same service available. He also points out the governor's original budget address didn't have any room for additional funds for state employees, so it wouldn't make a lot of sense to add another position. But ultimately, the committee passed the bill unanimously, and those Senate education members had almost a little bit of bickering, who wanted to bring it to the Senate floor because they were so inspired by student testimonies and the success rate.
Right. I want to bring Stephanie Rissler into the conversation because last night South Dakota Focus was live talking about industrial hemp, one of the issues that's really top of mind for a lot of South Dakotans and lawmakers. Stephanie, did you just feel the energy in the room from listeners as well as they sent in their questions about this? There was kind of an overflow, it seemed.
I think a lot of folks across the state are paying close attention to what lawmakers are saying. Yesterday, yes, we really tried to dive into the issue. To the table, we had one of the main sponsors of the bill, Representative Orrin Lesmeister. He's from Parade, South Dakota. I also tried to reach out to those in the ag industry. We had the president of South Dakota Farmers Union, and I brought in those that work in the industry of hemp manufacturing, marketing. It was an interesting conversation, you know, to try to figure out if this is to pass. And if it does pass, there's an emergency clause on it, so it will go into effect immediately. What will this mean for our state?
Yeah. So Randy Stratton had something to say that really surprised me. Tell us a little bit about who he is and how he kind of goes back to that there was a time. This isn't necessarily a new conversation. I didn't know that.
I know, I did not either. Randy Stratton, he's with a group called Secure Crop. So really, he works with folks in specialty crops. So that's where industrial hemp will come in. He talked about growing up in South Dakota. He's from Lake County up by Madison. His family actually used to grow hemp until it was shut down in 1937.
Actually, my father farmed with my grandfather in Lake County. And some of their neighbors actually grew hemp as well. And there was a market in Minnesota because there were mills in Minnesota that would buy hemp for textiles and for rope and other things in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. Mm-hmm. And so if you can imagine, along the I-29 corridor in South Dakota-Minnesota border, you had a lot of farmers right in that area that were growing hemp, and it was all being shipped up to Minneapolis to be processed. And my father remembers hearing his father say, "Now, why would the government stop that?" Because that's what they did in 1937. And my dad recalls that conversation.
Yeah. All right, so the governor's expressed concerns, and one of the big concerns with people is about monitoring the people who want to cheat the system. What did you learn about some of those early efforts for starting a program like this in South Dakota?
You know, if you choose to grow or possess hemp and you get the licensure to do this, this really is giving the Department of Ag the consent to come in, take a look at what you're doing, take samples and test it. And of course, if you're found growing something you're not supposed to, they'll take all of what you've grown. You have to pay for it as a producer. I asked both Randy and Doug, president of Farmers Union, and what they both said is, if this passes, we are going to take baby steps and be very careful.
We're going to walk before we run with this industry. Yeah. And we're going to have to get some of the kinks out. And there's going to be potentially some, I don't know if paranoia is the right word, but there's going to be some concern that maybe there's more marijuana possibly coming into the state, trying to get under the radar. And so I guess the way I look at it is I hope that we would look at this as, is there a probable cause to go on that property? Is there already something that sends a red flag up?
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, I mean, as far as routine inspections, I guess, I think routine inspections keeps everybody honest. And if we're gonna have it in law, then I think routinely we need to maybe go out and take a look at these things. But I hope that there's some way to keep this so that we're not, going over the top with it. I think probable cause maybe would be a way to look at that too.
So then, Doug, the follow-up is, if hemp is found to be in violation of the law, it can be confiscated by the Department of Ag, and then the cost of doing so will be paid by the grower or processor. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Listen, Stephanie, we're already doing a lot of this in South Dakota. If you're raising GMO product, whether it's corn or soybeans, you're already signing a license agreement that this can happen to you. A lot of people probably don't even realize it, but that's what happens. You can't keep the seed to replant it. It might not be a felony, but they're allowed to come out into your crop and test it to see if you've been cheating the system.
Stephanie, as you saw those questions rolling in, and you know you're having the live conversation with your guests, and did you think that a lot of people in South Dakota are concerned about, you know, they're kind of siding with the governor and having big concerns, or are they sort of leaning toward, you know, let's get this going and make the program happen?
The questions that came in last night were very much in favor of let's move forward. A lot of applause to those that were on the show for the ability to come forward with their information, their suggestions, their knowledge on the topic. A lot of folks saying this is just another tool for our farmers and ranchers who are already struggling. Let's get this done.
Another big issue this week was a House bill called 1057, and we're going to bring Lee Strubinger into the conversation from the Capitol building in Pierre. Lee, tell me about this big bill hearing of the week. Where did it come from, and how lawmakers, tell me about how lawmakers reacted to it. And again, 1057 is legislation to criminalize doctors, certain medical treatment for transgender youth, and looking at what doctors can provide. Tell us about how lawmakers are reacting to it and where the bill came from.
Sure. The earliest discussions I can find of this bill is Representative Fred Deutsch's travel to D.C. Deutsch is the prime sponsor of the bill, and he traveled to D.C. for a Heritage Foundation summit on protecting children from sexualization. His update in a LRC legislative report in November says, you know, that South Dakota should establish this legislation to criminalize doctors that provide sex change operations in children. We know several other states are considering similar legislation, states like Florida and Utah, and several others are talking about it. Supporters of the bill say this is about protecting children from abuse. It creates a class one misdemeanor for doctors who perform sex change procedures on minors, as well as provide puberty blocking hormones. Opponents say it infringes on the doctor-patient relationship, among other things. A recent study, it just came out yesterday from the American Academy of Pediatrics, finds a direct correlation between puberty blockers in trans children and suicidal tendencies. Suicide among transgender individuals is about 35%. And what they found in that study for children who use those puberty blockers is that those suicidal tendencies tend to go down.
Hmm. All right, so do we have a window into what Governor Noem is thinking about this bill?
We are about 15 minutes away from a Noem press conference, so we'll find out then. I'm sure she'll get asked about it. Meanwhile, I've been interviewing executive branch secretaries to see how their departments would respond to something like this passing. Secretary of Tourism Jim Hagan, there was a big tourism conference banquet last night, and you know, I asked what, you know, how tourism would deal with this, and he said that the state's tourism industry welcomes people with open arms regardless of political affiliation and ideology.
What we tell visitors is, listen, it doesn't matter what state you live in, city, municipality, you're always going to have legislation or proposed legislation that, you know, people may not agree with. But our message to them is, listen, when you come to South Dakota, this industry is going to welcome you with open arms. We're not checking IDs at the border. We're not checking political philosophies, ideologies. We want you to know you're welcome here.
The CDC says that, 35%, as I said earlier, of trans people are susceptible to suicidal tendencies. And I talked with Lori Gill, the Secretary of the Department of Social Services. She and Secretary of Health Ken Malsom-Risden have been updating the legislature on their efforts to combat suicide in the state. During their presentation, they said targeted efforts for individual groups is how they are most successful in reducing suicide. So here's what Gill had to say when I asked about how they address trans suicide.
With a lot of different populations, it is effective to look at the strategies and maybe tweak them so that it is more effective. So there's multiple ways to look at that. We have lots of different strategies for different populations. So I would not exclude any particular group, because there's lots of ways to attack prevention using different methods for different groups of folks.
And last night, I attended the tourism banquet, as I mentioned earlier, and Governor Noem took a moment to talk about the governor's pheasant hunt in Sioux Falls. It's going to be the first one that is held there in 2020. And she said that the governor's pheasant hunt will be a way to attract industry to the state. And here's what else she had to say.
The heart and the mission of this event has always been to showcase South Dakota to business leaders who are looking to expand or to grow their business in our state.
And I play that clip because during her State of the State, you know, she said that South Dakota is open for business. And, you know, other groups are a little bit concerned about this bill. The South Dakota and Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce oppose this legislation. They say it's draconian in its targeting of specific groups of people, in this case, trans children.
All right, Lee, let's look ahead to next week with everybody here gathered around the sort of virtual statewide table. Lee, let's start with you. What do you anticipate for next week in the South Dakota State Legislature?
Well, we're anticipating hearing House Bill 1057 on the House floor at some point. I don't know a day yet. But we're also anticipating the hemp bill that was talked about just earlier to drop. Legislators have been meeting with the governor's office this week to talk about amendments to the bill. Lawmakers I've spoke with, too, are pleased with those amendments, one of those being licensing for commercial driving as opposed to a farmer trucking some hemp to their home. And what I'm hearing is this could really come down to dollars, whether or not the state has that money to prop up this program initially.
All right. Stephanie Rissler, very briefly, what are you anticipating for next week?
Yeah, Senate Bill 51 is coming up. This will authorize the possession of a concealed pistol by employees in county courthouses. Senator Lance Russell will introduce that. I'm going to keep my eye on that one.
All right, Jackie Hendry, in 15 seconds. Next week in the state legislature, big things to look for.
Senate Bill 66, providing for creation of and funding of Ocheti Chacoin charter schools. That's what I'm excited to hear in committee.
All right, we'll see you all next week.